Welcome to Bankless, where we explore the frontier of DEXs on Solana. Today, we're talking to Miao from the Jupiter Project, which is perhaps the super DEX, the super exchange on Solana. We'll talk about what that is. Earlier this week, the Jupe token, the highly, hotly anticipated token out of Jupiter, has actually launched. This token was announced back at Solana Breakpoint in November of last year, and has been hotly anticipated ever since. It just came in at a $6 billion fully diluted valuation, which is equivalent to Uniswap on Ethereum. So a very big launch. We got about $800 million of that actually circulating. So that is the actual market cap. And we're bringing on Miao, the founder. That is his pseudonym. Apparently, it's very close to his actual real name, but people just call him Miao. He is a cat in a spacesuit on Twitter. We're bringing on Miao to talk about what is Jupiter? What is Jupiter under the hood? And then also the token launch. So this will, I think, be a hybrid episode for the Ethereum community, which Bankless, of course, has is the majority of the Bankless audience, who have never experienced Jupiter before, or maybe only touched it once or twice, have heard about it, but don't really know what it is. That would be, I would call, the first part of the episode, the first half. And then the second half of the episode is going to be more geared towards the Solana people who are interested in the details of the launch of Jupe. There was a bit of controversy about the launch of Jupe that I heard. I am not super tapped into these conversations, so I'm coming at a very high level. Miao will give his account and explanation of the mechanism for the Jupe launch. He will give his side of the story. I do not have the capacity to give what might be the other side of the story, so you'll have to search for that elsewhere when whatever Solana circles are discussing this. So there's a disclaimer there, I guess. Overall, found it a pretty fascinating. There are definitely some differences about what Jupiter is on Solana versus what the typical DEX aggregator is on Ethereum. Miao walks through all of those things. And then we also just get into the other conversations like the load on the Solana network, what's next for the Jupiter team with the liquidity that they have sourced as a result of the token launch, and also what's next for Jupiter. Teaser, they are hiring if you are looking for a job. And now let's go ahead and get right into the conversation with Miao from Jupiter. But first, a moment to talk about some of these fantastic sponsors that make this show possible, especially Kraken, our preferred crypto exchange in 2024. If you do not have an account with Kraken, consider clicking the links in the show notes. How else are you going to get your boomer fiat bucks into the much more sci-fi world of crypto other than using Kraken? Click the link in the show notes to getting started with Kraken today. Kraken knows crypto. Kraken's been in the crypto game for over a decade. And as one of the largest and most trusted exchanges in the industry, Kraken is on the journey with all of us to see what crypto can be. Human history is a story of progress. It's part of us, hardwired. We're designed to seek change everywhere, to improve, to strive. And if anything can be improved, why not finance? Crypto is a financial system designed with the modern world in mind. Instant, permissionless, and 24/7. It's not perfect, and nothing ever will be perfect. But crypto is a world-changing technology at a time when the world needs it the most. That's the Kraken mission, to accelerate the global adoption of cryptocurrency so that you and the rest of the world can achieve financial freedom and inclusion. Head on over to kraken.com/bankless to see what crypto can be. Not investment advice. Crypto trading involves risk of loss. Cryptocurrency services are provided to U.S. and U.S. territory customers by Payward Ventures Inc. PVI, doing business as Kraken. Celo is the mobile-first, EVM-compatible, carbon-negative blockchain built for the real world. And now, something big is happening. Introducing the Celo Layer 2. It's a game-changing proposal that's going to bring Celo's rapidly growing ecosystem home to Ethereum. Vitalik has shared his excitement for the Celo Layer 2 on the Celo forum, so has Ben Jones from Optimism. But why? The Celo Layer 2 will bring huge advantages, like a decentralized sequencer, off-chain data availability, and one-block finality. What does all that mean? Rock-solid security, a trustless bridge to Ethereum, and more real-world use cases for Ethereum without compromise. And real-world adoption is happening. Active addresses on Celo have grown over 500% in the last 6 months. With the Celo Layer 2, gas fees will stay low, and you can even pay for gas using ERC20 tokens. But Celo is a community-governed protocol. This means that Celo needs you to weigh in and make your voice heard. Join the conversation in the Celo forum. Follow at Celo.org on Twitter and visit Celo.org to shape the future of Ethereum.
Bankless Nation, I'm here with the founder of Jupiter named Miao. Miao, welcome to the show.
Hey, how's it going?
Nice to meet you, Miao. So you just had a gargantuan token launch. A $6 billion app just launched a token coming in at $6 billion. Yeah. At fully diluted value, yeah. New value into the world. Congrats on that. How
does it feel
to be post-launch?
Oh, man, thanks for asking. No, no, no.
I haven't even asked you that yet.
No, seriously, thanks for asking, because no one has really asked me yet, right? So thanks a lot for asking. You know, the team has worked really hard, right? And certainly the funny thing is this, right? Like, we don't control the value, right? We don't, right? In fact, if you ask me and stuff, it's like, okay, it's like the market gave us this value, right? Then on our end, I think we're incredibly lucky, right? And fortunate, right? To be a recipient of this value, right? You know, I think it is, on one hand, like, okay, we are grateful that things didn't mess up. We're extremely grateful that, I mean, we were able to give a present, right? You know, to a lot of people, you know, right? I mean, lots of people are like, I mean, obviously, I wish they kept their jupe, right? But lots of people are like, hey, I could pay for my meal. Hey, I could I could finally buy my iPhone, right? And I feel like, obviously, we hear a lot about people like, you know, they're playing a gaming system and getting lots of capital. But there's also these, like, you know, many small stories, right? You know, and that's pretty happy for me. So I think it feels very grateful, you know. So I think on one hand, it's like accumulation of a lot of work done. So we're very happy to do it and manifest that, right? You know, also giving presents on people. And also and last but not least, it marks the beginning, you know. I think this whole process has been this amazing community process, right? Because value is not generated by a team, right? If you're making a pencil, for example, maybe, right, you know, but if you're making a coin, a currency, a token, right, then the value is generated by community, right, ecosystem, right, you know. So last but not least, obviously, incredibly grateful to the community and ecosystem, right, for doing this with us. Yeah.
Well, yeah, and I think Solana as an ecosystem is learning how to do airdrops. We had the Jito drop. This is like the second big drop after Jito. There's been others as well, but really these are kind of the two big ones. And one of the things I've been curious about is just learning about how Solana app teams learn to navigate a very difficult process of like beginning actually to like decentralize their whole app. I want to get into that subject later, but as you probably know, and as listeners definitely know, this is more, we have a more of a Ethereum focus on Bankless. We are familiar with Ethereum. We know how these systems work on Ethereum. So I want to unpack what Jupiter is under the hood for our more Ethereum-centric audience. So the next bit of questions is like, if I were to pop open the hood of Jupiter, what would I see? How is it different? And then I'll ask, how does Jupiter uniquely leverage Solana? But for people that don't know what Jupiter is or don't know what it is and haven't used it before, what is Jupiter? It's a exchange on Solana, but like take it from there. If I were to like look under the hood of Jupiter, what would I find?
Okay, so if you don't look under the hood, just look at the car, right? We are a full service exchange, right? You know, we have swap, we limit orders, we have DCA, right? We have perps and we also have a gateway to Solana, onboarding to Solana, and we also have a launch pad, right, which is just launched, right, you know? Yeah, so that's what you see on the outside, right? And what you see on the inside is that you see this extremely meticulously designed, elaborately engineered over 3 or 4 years, system, right, meant to, find the best routes, right, across the whole Solana network, in a way that is as fast as possible, right? Because as you guys know, Solana's block time is 400 milliseconds, right? And also Solana transaction speed is very, very, very fast. And also transaction fees are very much lower, right? So in many ways, compared to other networks whereby, so basically we had to find, so we had to aggregate across all the markets and also find routes, not just for like larger trades, but also very small trades, right? So our goal is very simple, right? It's like whether you're doing a 2 cent trade or whether you're doing a $100 trade or $1 million trade, right? We want to kind of effectively kind of route through the system, right? In a much more effective way, right? And one big difference with Ethereum is this. So Ethereum's constraint is gas fee, right? Or we know that. So Solana has a different set of constraints, right? It's like the account size limit is smaller and different. So it's like basically how do we kind of like constantly navigate that? So how do we kind of like build a system that's extremely optimized, right, for like Solana's like, you know, speed and cost. But at the same time, like, you know, handle its limitations, you know? Yeah, so that's kind of what we see. And that's the sort aggregation. So that sort aggregation powers a number of systems, right? It powers the sort, obviously. It powers the limit orders, it powers the DCA, you know, but it also powers certain key things about the perks as well, right? You know, yeah. So so I think a number of things. Yeah. So that's what I see under the hood. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
On the surface, you have these different ways of swapping. You have the swaps, a limit order, dollar cost averaging, and perps. These are all just ways to make a trade happen. And then under the hood, you say that this is a DEX aggregator. We have DEX aggregators on Ethereum, right? They do exactly what you say. They find liquidity across Ethereum, and then they package it into the best execution for their users. Is Jupiter a source of liquidity as well? Is it like an AMM like Uniswap as well? Or is it more just of an aggregator of liquidity, and it finds liquidity elsewhere on Solana? Where is the liquidity coming from?
So three different ways, right? The first way, for the swap limit on DCA, there's no liquidity. For the perps, we have liquidity. Actually, we actually have one of the largest by volume perps platforms in DeFi, right? Our perps did about 1.4 billion in volume last week.
Okay, right? So Jupiter hosts its own liquidity for its perps product.
Yes, precisely. Right, you know, yeah, precisely, right. And then for Launchpad, we source liquidity, right, from teams, right, to host on the platform, right? You know, and then and also obviously we also host the airdrop as well, right? You know, for people as well. Yeah. So I would say this. I think I think one thing that I'm very proud of at Jupiter, right, is that we really push the limitation of Solana to a limit, right? Like, for example, there were a few things. Like, for example, Solana in the past had this problem where transactions can only be so big when they send the transaction in, right? And they implemented lookup tables. So we're the first to implement lookup tables. We're the first to implement priority fees, and first to implement and basically anything that Solana does, we're the first to incorporate right into our system. You know, yeah. So So I think we are like a really good example of composability, right, on Solana, because you can basically go through like 6 or 7 markets on Solana for like transaction fee of like 0.002 cents, you know. Yeah, so I think that's actually one really, really cool thing, I think, yeah, that we really focus on. Yeah,
yeah. I definitely want to lean into that, but really just to round out the liquidity question, the swaps and the limit orders, where does Jupiter source its liquidity if it's not
everywhere
on Solana? So there's other like AMMs or other order limit orders on other apps, and then Jupiter finds them.
There are actually a range of, it's actually interesting. It might be interesting for your audience, right? Because on Solana, you also have, for example, you know, stick and unsticking, right? So for example, if you go from Sol, right, to Stick Sol, liquid Stick Sol.
Oh, right? Staking,
like, staking, right? Liquid Stick Sol, right? Like Judo Sol or like Marinette Sol, whatever, right? So Jupiter also integrates something called Sanctum, right? Which essentially allows for immediate staking and unstaking, right? So you can, so on Jupiter, right, you can immediately go from like a very large Sol order to a very, very large, like to the very large liquid Sol, like in the same transaction, right? So you rush through like AMMs and CLOBs and also that one thing, and so the way back too, right? You know, right? So I think there are actually a number of like really interesting. And obviously CLOBs is actually very proficient on Solana, right? But you don't really see them anywhere else. And actually integrating all these different systems, right, like the AMMs and CLOBs and things like Sanctum, right, into one system, right, it's actually quite challenging. And also another thing that, another kind of AMMs that you have on Solana is like a single-sided liquidity pools, right? So basically, I think what, because the cost of that execution is so low, you do see a bigger variety of like, you know, possible liquidity systems that you don't see elsewhere, right? So I think that's actually something quite interesting about Jupiter does, right, is that we actually spend an incredible amount of time and effort, right, trying to I'll put you saying, we are where the AMM stick off the training wheels, right? Because you know, they build and build and build, but they're not sure what breaks, right? So the moment they plug into our system, the first second there is like, you know, that hundreds of orders flooding in, right, in the first minute, right? So I think and they sometimes they break, right? So we work with the team to really try to fix them and everything, and because a lot of these systems are very novel, right? You know, so we work with them a lot. So under the hood, if you look beyond under the hood to the people working under the hood, right, right, I think you will see a team that is like very, very committed, you know, right? It's not me, by the way, it's the engineers, right? You know, like they are very, very committed to making sure that the whole system works as well as possible, right? You know, that really understand like every single detail about the AMM, you know, and take how to integrate everything, right? and we had the same amount, and we had the same level of dedication to all our products, right? Limit order, swaps, and DCA, and perps, and everything. Yeah, so that's I think that's what you see under the hood. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay, so you were about to get into it, and then I wanted to go back and just like tie off that liquidity question, but I want to ask about how does Jupiter leverage Solana? Solana has unique properties that no other blockchain has. You know, it's extremely fast. It's got some parallelization to it. What are the strengths of Solana that Jupiter really leans into?
I mean, the most obvious one is cost, right? Mm-hmm. You know, it's like it's cheap to execute a complicated trade on Solana. You know, right? So I would say this, right? It's like besides the technical capability of Solana, right? It's also an ecosystem, right? Solana actually has a very, very well developed ecosystem, right? And also so it's actually two things. So you have a lot of like different kind of EMMs, right? You know, and with people who are investing like real technical effort, right, into designing new systems, right? For example, Phoenix is an extremely different system from OpenBoat. And OpenBoat V2 is a very different system from Phoenix, right? You know, mm-hmm. And a bunch of other open worlds are coming out as well, right? So you really have a lot of people who are like investing a lot of time and effort into their own system. But obviously, you don't have volume, right? You know, mm-hmm. At the start of new system, right? So what we do is that we plug you in, and immediately you get all the retail flow and all the everything. So we do that. So I think to us, it's not just about leveraging the speed of Solana. Right, you know, but also the ecosystem as well, which is very, very important, you know. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so one of the big stories about Jupiter was that there was no VC funding; it was bootstrapped just from you and from the team. Can you talk about the genesis of Jupiter? Like, how did the idea get started? How did the project get started? And when did it get started? Tell us about the genesis story.
Sure. Let me go way back. Right. So we started out as I did a lot of stuff in Ethereum. Right, as well, right?
You know, pretty typical. Everyone generally has their start.
Yeah, right? You know, like Instadab, Kyber, mm-hmm. And like also I also started WBTC. You know, mm-hmm. When I was like working them, with BitGo and everything. Right, so I was actually really active in Ethereum. You know, I just didn't talk that much. we started a project called Mercurial, right? And then Mercurial mm-hmm. is a project I started as well. And then that project took funding. Mm-hmm. That project took funding, right? And over time, their project didn't do that well, mm-hmm. right? You know, and eventually, what happened was that we started Jupiter as a new project, as a completely new project, right? You know, while Mercurial became Meteora, mm-hmm. right? And then now with a project called Meteora, right? So it's also doing extremely well as well. It's also doing extremely well right now, right? So basically, I think the genesis of Jupiter started as Mercurial, right? Which did take funding, right?
Mm-hmm.
And also which did take funding, right? And then it had a token as well, right? And then it transitioned, and then in about February 2023, we took a snapshot, right? You know, okay. And then we took a snapshot, and then and now 5% of total Jup supply goes to Mercurial stakeholders,
okay,
right? You know, okay. while 100% of the circulating supply of Meteora goes to the most stakeholders. Yeah, a snapshot taken in Feb 2023. Yeah.
Okay, so there were some other applications, some other startups that you started before Jupiter. Eventually, you pivoted into Jupiter, would you call it a pivot?
No. It's a new project.
Yeah, it's a new project. Yes, it's right. Uh-huh.
But the original project became Meteora.
Right.
You know. Yeah, so I mean, we documented all these things in excruciating detail, right? Uh-huh. In many different places, you know, right? But I think eventually we were able to. It was a long process, right? Mm-hmm. But I think eventually we were able to come up with. We were able to kind of like I believe, and it's my personal belief, right? And certainly, I think a lot of people appreciated it. To create, I think, two projects, Jupiter and Meteora, right? Mm-hmm. You know, that had a lot of value. Right, you know, and we were able. I think we were able to funnel that value, right? You know, mm-hmm. to the original like Mercurial stakeholders. Yeah.
Okay. All right. So, where did the idea, the inspiration for Jupiter come from, and how did the team form?
The integration for the inspiration of Jupiter was quite simple, right? Is that like So obviously, aggregation is not a new idea, right? Mm-hmm. It's not a new idea at all, right?
Right.
But it turns out to be excruciating hard to do. Okay.
Yeah.
So the first few order book systems on, for example, right, one major source of liquidity on for Solana, right, early on was Serum, right? And the Serum works completely different, right? You know, from a AMM, regular AMM, right? So basically, and then you know, so basically the very, very first step that you had to do, right, to even integrate this major source of liquidity was to understand Serum.
Right.
Right. So basically, I think what will happen was that, like, you know, we were playing around with a number of different ideas. Not ideas, playing around a number of different things. So one thing is very simple. Actually, as part of my Ethereum background, right, I've always known something, right? Essentially, whichever if you have the best price, the best token selection, and the best UX, you win, right? You tend to win. Right, over time, might not immediately, but over time you win, right? So I know that because I was part of that system, right? Mm-hmm. And, oh, by the way, David, just to let you know, I'm very happy to talk to you, because I've been on more Solana podcast, right? Mm-hmm. So talking to you is really fun because like, it's kind of bringing back to Ethereum this.
Right.
So thanks for that, right? But back with the point. So I feel like I knew very very well, right? What will win, mm-hmm. right? Like and one of the things that I always notice is like, okay, why don't people use aggregators on Ethereum more? Yes.
Right.
It's quite simple as that. Yes. Right. Yeah. You know, and then while on the L2s, right, there's just not that many, like different AMMs, right? They bother, you know, so you just go directly there, right? So anyway with that understanding, I was like, okay, you know what? Like, okay, on so I was thinking, hey, you know what, an aggregator on Solana will probably be effective. You know, right? Because you must have built it well, right? So anyway, back then there was actually 3 or 4 different aggregators on Solana already, right? They're trying to make it, but then we were looking around at them, and they were like, they can't do it because they couldn't figure out the most basic thing about how do you make a AMM work with a CLOB, right? That is very very different because they work completely differently, right? So it started out more as a curiosity thing, right? You know, or like, hey, you know what? How do we, can it actually be done, right? How do we do it in a way that, okay, so another thing that's important is that we are a very UX-focused team, right? So we have a lot of like hardcore engineers and stuff, but we are all like very UX-focused, right? And I think that combination is very important, right? Being like able to do the hard technical work, right, you know, but also being able to like really care about the user experience, right? Because that was very difficult. So I think eventually after two months of like raw work just to do one integration, right? But then at some point I understood, wow, I get it now. I get why no one else is doing this, right? Because mm-hmm. it took us 2 months just to do that simple integration, right? You know, so after we did that, I think that gave us a lot of like confidence, right, to spin up Jupiter as a new project, you know, right? And we went from there. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's how it got started. Yeah.
How many people are on the team? Like, how many engineers and or front end devs? Like, give us a snapshot of the team
now or back then.
Now, yeah. Uh-huh. Or maybe if there were other important phases to talk about too, like what was it like in the past and what is it now?
Oh yeah, yeah. Probably six or seven in the past. Yeah, when we started on this we kept pretty small for a long time, you know? Mm-hmm. And then now we are like 16, 17, 18 okay. around there and growing quite rapidly, you know, right. Because we do actually plan to, you know, do a lot of things. But yeah, it was a period of like very intense like experimentation. Right. Mm-hmm. And again, I feel like it's one of those things that I feel like there are a lot of teams that hop between Ethereum and Solana and other things. But I feel like don't do that. You know, I feel like it's very difficult because like to win in any ecosystem requires a lot of like very deep faith in the community. I mean, you know this, right? It's like, you know, right. a big part of whether your product gets any traction is if the broader community accepts you or not. Right. Mm-hmm. I think that was actually one problem, right? Is that but one thing that's just interesting here is that I think back at the peak of the Solana hype, I think a lot of other more prominent aggregator, everyone signaled they want to enter Solana, right? You know, mm-hmm. right? And in the end, only one did, Kyber, right? You know, but I think the others didn't. And it's because of what I talked about, right? There's like really, really big like technical hurdle to actually understand, to even get a functional product working, right? And even after they get it working, to kind of iron out all the different details, right? And don't get me wrong, you know what's funny? Here's funny. I feel like the process that we went through was probably very similar to the process that the early ETH guys went through, right? I mean, can you imagine life before ERS20? I mean, come on, seriously, right? You know, you'll be crazy, you know, right? Or even before a lot of these new things came out, right? So I feel like we kind of went through that phase together, right? You know? Yeah, so I think that's the reason why over time we built up a very strong like understanding, you know? Yeah. Okay. So that's about it, I guess, yeah.
Yeah.
So that's how it works, yeah.
Sure. Let's get into the launch of Jupiter. You actually announced the Jupiter airdrop incoming at Solana Breakpoint last November. Yes. And that's when the snapshot was, at least for phase one. We'll talk about what phase two and beyond looks like.
Yes.
955,000 addresses were eligible, almost a million. And just for comparison, the largest airdrop of all time was the Arbitrum airdrop at 600,000. Arbitrum Optimism had 250,000. I mean, I know that it's like pretty cheap to spin up a new Solana wallet and then start transacting on it just because the fees on Solana are so low. But what do you make of this very high like address account? Like why are there so many active addresses that were eligible for the Jupiter airdrop?
So just to recap a little bit, right? I think in Breakpoint, we announced a number of things. We announced the token. Uh-huh. We announced a token sale. We announced a launch pad, and we also announced a bunch of other. We also announced perks as well, right? You know,
okay.
We also announced a new stablecoin initiative. So it was, and it was actually a very it was a very cool time for us because over the last 2 years we've been building, right? Just building, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So it was just really cool to just be out there, you know, right. Like for the first time in 2 years, right? I think it was also really great because like everyone used Jupiter before, right? So it's a mm-hmm. product that they had already had a very close touch with. And they knew very well. So it was like I feel like it was a combination of like knowing the product and wanting a new token in the ecosystem. I think that, and that's actually why I think it was actually extremely well accepted, right? Mm-hmm. So, I think a big part of that, I think it relates to your question you're asking, right? I feel like most expert users will have one or two wallets. Right, at least two or more wallets, right? You know, and certainly we do know of bot farms, some bot farms that actually ran about like I think 10k was the max we had, right? No, and now actually we know pretty well right now because we started claiming, right? You know, right?
Right.
And we and everyone started coming out, right? So actually we're pretty clear now. So the good thing is this. So let me give it to you in the most no bullshit way possible. Okay, I hope you trust me on that, right? In a sense that I do believe that roughly half was like really legit, right? Mm-hmm. You know, because the number of excitement that we had about around the token, right? And a number of like, and we see it now, right? It's like to sustain a $600 million airdrop, it's actually not easy, right? You actually need a real community to actually give USDC, right? also to get it, right? So I think as soon as there's real excitement, right? This call is going crazy, everything, right? So I think I would say about like half is our real users. That is my best guess. If you ask me,
half of addresses are real. Half are farms.
Half, like duplicates, not farms. Duplicates.
Oh, okay.
Like a user having two or more wallets, right? I'm saying,
right.
You know, and I'll say this: we only found, we actually did extensive cluster analysis on it, right? Because we want to make sure that so we actually didn't find, because David, remember this, right? We didn't announce an airdrop at all, right? So one of the things that we were very very careful about was that because I hate promises, right? I hate promising things, right? Because certainly, I think in my past experience, whenever I promise something, things fail, right? Because it's expectation, and then do magic, things fail, right? So I think one of the things that I was very, very, very careful about over years, right, was that no token talk, no adopt talk, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, so I'm actually very convinced that no one actually did that. And then when we did the clustering analysis, right? You know, we did find some clusters. Right, you know, but then it wasn't that much, right? Now, but then something interesting happened. What sipped our attention, right? I'll tell you this, okay? What sipped our attention was that like there was a big farm of our 10,000 addresses, okay, that came in the last minute, you know? Because what happens is that approaching Breakpoint, right? November 2nd, right? The hype became real, very, very high. right? You know, right? And then the token wasn't announced yet, right? Nobody does a lot of hype, right? But I think what I think happened was that someone started farming then, right? So he spun out like you know, 10,000 wallets and stuff and traded everything crazy, right? So that is like the only and that happened like a few days before Bitcoin, right? So and that was only when the token top became real, right? Mm-hmm. You know, so they did that. So that's the only big one that we found, right? And that was, that's very annoying for me, right? Imagine someone running a script, taking out 2 million dupe, right? Mm-hmm. And then dumping in the market. Like, oh, the fuck? I mean, I know. Okay, but David, okay. If you're interested, I mean, since you're interested in details, right? I will tell you why we missed that, right? We missed that because we divide our adder into two categories, okay? Mm-hmm. The first category is like tiered based, right? That means it's like, okay, if you trade like if you trade $1,000 above and stuff, you get the you get a lot more, right? You know what I'm saying? 1 million, a lot more, things like that, right? You know, it's not really 1,000, but it's based on the top number of people traded, right? And then some modifiers, right? And then we did, because we wanted to be as inclusive as possible, right? We allocated 200 JUP to everyone, right? That means that whether you traded $1 or 50 cents or whatever, you get 200 JUP, right? So, and because I had this mentality of like being as inclusive as possible, which by the way, I still think that's the right strategy, by the way. I still think it was the right strategy for me to give 200 JUP to everyone, right? You know, right? However, I think, unfortunately, we ran the cluster analysis only for the ones that got large amounts of JUP, right? And we didn't run the cluster analysis, right? You know, for like those 200. Ah. 200, right? So we missed out on that big like, cluster, right? You know, right? Yeah. Mainly because I was like, okay, you know what? Everyone should get something, right? But what I didn't expect was that there was this like big fat fucking cluster. Fucking annoying for me, right? You know, because we tried really hard, right? So it's like, because you know, cluster analysis is never accurate, right? You can never get it precisely right, right? Mm-hmm. So I was like, okay, whatever. I'm just gonna give the benefit of doubt to everybody and stuff, you know, and just give 200 to everybody, right? You know, but as a result of that, we did miss out on this like giant cluster that probably came last minute, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that's a big miss for me. Yeah, so but it's fine. I think there'll be future airdrops. I'll do better, you know. Yeah, that's it. Yeah.
For the historical addresses that used Jupiter. Like when did Jupiter go live? Like when were some of the first trades that were eligible for receiving? And then overall, like over the span of Jupiter's history, for the people that got the airdrop, like what were they trading? Were they trading Solana for other tokens on Jupiter? Was it USDC being traded on Jupiter? Kind of like what's the qualitative nature of the activity on Jupiter for the span of time that that Jupiter's been alive? Like what are people trading on Jupiter?
They trade a lot of different things. For a long time it was, I think, we went live on November, October 2021, right?
October 2021. Okay.
And then
the peak of Solana mania in 2021. Yeah.
Some say down, but peak is down too, whatever, you know, right?
Yeah.
But I feel like let's digress a bit. I feel like that's actually why I think the community appreciates us so much. It's because I think we started at the peak, and then even when the markets looked really really bad, right? You know, and everyone ran away, we were like committed to it, right? You know, right? So I think and we were the most like front facing example of that, right? So I think that's the reason. I mean, don't get me wrong, it goes two ways, right? I think they were appreciative of us, and we are appreciative of them too, right? You know, so there's this like you know this harmony, which is why I think we have a high level of trust, right? You know, because we were there, you know. But back to your point, yeah, I think it was October 2021, and So and then October 21, I think. And back then, if I'm not wrong, most were just trading Sol USD, USDC, right? Mm-hmm. And then and back then there was like this first generation of tokens. Like for example, you had the first generation of meme coins, right? You know, and you had tokens like Oka and Radium, Mango, right? Things like that, you know, right? So that was actually the ones that were kind of traded, right? And then that that was true for a while. Right, you know, and then USDC was pretty big as well, right? You know, right? And some level of like wormhole tokens too, you know. But then after that, that was the first phase, right? First phase of like first phase, and then you had second phase, where obviously everything crashed and died, you know, after the FTX thing. So activity actually pretty much like went to like the tokens the volume was horrible. right? You know, like really, really fucking bad, right? You know? But Bonk came up, right? Bonk came up. So Bonk came up and it was big, right? Because, and that
Bonk kind of came out like not too long after the FTX implosion, right? It was something December of 2022 or January?
A bit later.
Early 2023. Q1 2023.
Around that, yeah. But that was big, right? Because right. That was like the first like fuck you meme coin, right? You know, right? That showed that tokens are live, right? Mm-hmm. You know, on Solana, right? And what was also very important was that like and big credit to Bong here, right? Is that I think and the Bong team like Norm, like RID9 and Primitive and like you know Kazen and KC. I mean, like this whole gang, we love them, right? You know, because I think they really embody a lot of the community ethos, right? You know, and learn a lot from them, right? But essentially, I think that came out. I think that was important. That showed that Solana had life, right? Mm-hmm. Because I remember it's funny because I think people were saying I was talking to some friends, right? And they were like, yeah, but it's just a meme coin, right? You know, whatever. I'm like, yeah, dude, but it shows that Solana has capital to deploy, right? It definitely showed right. that Solana. Mm-hmm. Had mm-hmm. capital to deploy. And even outside of Solana, people was paying attention to Solana, right? You know, right? It's those two things are not nothing.
Right,
you know?
It was a canary in a coal mine, for sure.
Precisely. But if you have capital to deploy, right?
Right.
And then you have a community willing to like ape it, right? Right? And then you have attention when you look into it and stuff, right? It's something, right? Mm-hmm. And obviously, Bong went through like tremendous ups and downs, right? Peaking recently and stuff, right? You know, right? To autumn high, you know, amazing for them, right? You know, I love them. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but anyway, long, that was like, so, and for a long time, that was like a Bong and other like smaller meme coins. For a while, they got added to the mix, right? And then recently, obviously, the meme coin thing went crazy, right? You know, and recently, this meme coin thing went crazy, right? You know, went crazy. I would say now is the, since a few months back, I think it was like the whole, it's pretty exciting because like, our volumes, like, not just us, but everyone's volume went up like, crazy, right? Because like you had this like audience and meme coins, right? Like the dog with hat, you know, like the Gen Z use Honda, Gen Z use Honda. Obviously, Peef, right. Jito, and now Juke, right, came out as well. I think what we're gonna see is that like we are kind of entering the fourth phase, right? You know, whereby Juke and whereby you have like this like I would call like really really good projects that are all not launch tokens yet, come mm-hmm. to launch tokens, right? You know. So I feel really excited about that, you know, because I think that all those tokens are going to bring a lot of excitement and vitality to the trading space, you know? Sure. Yeah.
Yeah. Mantle, formerly known as BitDAO, is the first DAO-led Web3 ecosystem, all built on top of Mantle's first core product, the Mantle Network, a brand new high-performance Ethereum Layer 2 built using the OP stack, but uses EigenLayer's data availability solution instead of the expensive Ethereum Layer 1. Not only does this reduce Mantle Network's gas fees by 80%, but it also reduces gas fee volatility, providing a more stable foundation for Mantle's applications. The Mantle Treasury is one of the biggest DAO-owned treasuries, which is seeding an ecosystem of projects from all around the Web3 space for Mantle. Mantle already has sub-communities from around Web3 onboarded, like Game 7 for Web3 Gaming, and Bybit for TVL and Liquidity and OnRamps. So if you want to build on the Mantle network, Mantle is offering a grants program that provides milestone-based funding to promising projects that help expand, secure, and decentralize Mantle. If you want to get started working with the first DAO-led Layer 2 ecosystem, check out Mantle at mantle.xyz and follow them on Twitter at 0xmantle. Are you launching a token? Is it already live? How are you managing the legal and tax for providing token awards for your team? Toku simplifies everything about managing token grant compensation, and you can get started with them for free. You'll have access to top-notch legal and tax support to handle the distribution and management of tokens for your team. Toku caters to every step in the process, from user-friendly legal templates for granting tokens to tracking vesting periods and calculating withholding taxes. Toku understands every grant structure, token purchase agreements, restricted token awards, restricted token units, token options, and all the other ones. Toku is already simplifying this today for leading companies like Protocol Labs, DYDX Foundation, MENA Foundation, and many more. You can learn more about how Toku can help you streamline your token management and get started for free. Visit Toku at toku.com/bankless or click the link in the description below.
So part of the Jupiter token launch was the Jupiter Launchpad, which is one of the things that you announced at Solana Breakpoint. Now, Launchpads as a product, these are tried and true products in the crypto space. They even exist in the TradFi space. We just use banks for them. And so this is just like a new primitive that Jupyter is bringing into the Solana ecosystem. Can you talk about what the Launchpad does and then talk about how the Jupe token leveraged it?
Okay, great. Thanks for asking. So I think at Breakpoint, I announced the intention to build a Launchpad, right? Because I really, really wanted a Launchpad, right? Because I think mainly because I think I wasn't too happy with existing Launchpads. In the sense that, I mean, you must be very familiar. You must be very familiar with the token gated model, right? You know, whereby you had to hold FTT in order to buy the tokens, right? You know, and then they do what we call a supply squeeze. That means that they limit the amount of like supply available at the start, right, and ramp up the demand, right? You know, and so the FTT holders benefit, right, because the thing goes live, go pretty crazy, right? But obviously, obviously what happens is that later on, the people that who believe in token the most, right, buys a token, right? But they get dumped into, right, things like that. So you see these like really big spikes, right?
Right.
You know, and all that is caused by what I call the supply squeeze, right? You know, that where you don't have enough supply in the market, right? Now, another launch model that's actually famous as well is what we consider to be I call them the isolated pool model, right? You know, whereby it's not in the open market yet, right? You know, but you pool capital together, right? This can be as simple as the ones that Mango did, which is like you had X number of like tokens in the market, X number of like USDC, and then the end pool is what you get, right? Or it can be like the LDP model, the balanced LDP model, where you start high and go low, right? And then you have other models like you allow multiple parties, including airdroppers, to put the tokens in. Many ways to do it, right? But I think what I didn't like about that model, right, was that like it was impossible to predict what happens, right? Because think about it, right? With that model, right? With those isolated pool models, your most enthusiastic believers, right, buy into that pool, right? And then and then based on how fast the pool goes and stuff, a price forms, right? But then the thing is that your most enthusiastic believers and stuff doesn't equate the market, right? You don't actually know how the market will react. Right, and the airdrop meta and the airdrop thing, but which I actually believe that the airdrop is the way to go, right? In terms of like it's just a fantastic way, right, of like rewarding users and benefiting community, right? And I can get to that. That's a very important thing to get into, right? But essentially, I think and then you add on to this airdrop thing, then you just can't predict, right? Well, how you go? So what? So the isolated pool model, right? You have this really big problem of like, okay, so quote unquote. You have price discovery in a very isolated pool, right? But then when you go to the market, it just goes down or go up. You don't know, and most likely go down. Why? Because your most active supporters already bought in the pool, right? Make sense? I think those are the two things that I think. And then thirdly is that you have the airdrop meta, right? The airdrop thing is where you just airdrop and they sell, right, in the market, right? I think that works. However, demand is extremely erratic, right? You know, because and furthermore, liquidity tends to be very thin, right? Mm-hmm. So a big selling just dump the token right away, right? And then as a new token, you don't really want that, you know, especially if you're on chain. You know, you kind of want to I think our launchpad is like, okay. Our launchpad basically says that okay, huh. Given that the open market is the best way to discover tokens, right? Given that the team often needs capital, right? You know, but I want to do it in the most transparent way possible, right? And thirdly is that given that we don't know what the demand dynamic looks like, right? You know, maybe a lot of people dumping, but no one's buying, right? Things like that. Like, how do we develop a launchpad, right? That is relevant, you know, for this like a new meta of like, you know, open market discovery, sufficient liquidity, right? You know, and also team capital, you know, so that was the basis that we went on to building this launchpad. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So for the price discovery of the Jupe token, like what were some of the economics on launch? Like what did that look like using the launchpad and for the Jupe token?
So essentially I think there were three components to it, right? You know, so the first component is obviously, so the, we call it the LFG launchpad. Right.
LFG. Nice.
Yeah, that's fucking cool. Right. Essentially, everybody starts at the same slot.
Uh-huh.
Right. So everybody's at the same slot, right? So basically, the airdroppers can claim and sell, right? people can buy into the pool, right? You know, at the same time. So what we did was that we set up so the way the Jupyter LFG platform works is that projects can set up a price curve, a liquidity curve, right? A sell only pool, right? Mm. A sell only pool. It actually works exactly like providing liquidity on anywhere with only CRM or DRM, right? Whereby you set up one side liquidity, right? And but there are two differences here, right? The first difference is that we have a tool that allows the user to specify three things, right? The project specifies three things. The project specifies the initial price, the max price, and the curve, right? So a steep curve for me looks like this, right? That means that okay, your initial price can be low, but it goes high really fast, right? Mm-hmm. A low curve goes like this, right? You know. Right. So I think for Jupyter, I think we set up a pool that looks like this, right? The initial price was like 0.4, right? Which was like slightly more than half of the post price. You know, and then the max price was 0.7, right?
Mm. The Jupyter Perps product allowed for some amount of price discovery ahead of the launch?
Oh, no.
Other people's perps.
Our perps only does token that exist.
Right? So there's other perps like Avo on Ethereum, I think, maybe Avo, had Avo, the Jupyter. Okay, so you had some information about what the market was pricing ahead of time.
So we're two information points, right?
Right.
But it's also fascinating. By the way, guys, I'm so happy, by the way, because I feel like it's so interesting. It's so interesting to kind of think about this thing, right? Because I'm getting a bit too excited.
Yeah.
Right. So let me just share with you. Yeah. So there are two places of there are two points of like of coin discovery, right?
Mm-hmm.
The first was Avio, right? The second was the Wheels Market, right? So those two things allow us to these two things and honestly they went through big fluctuations, right? You know, in the last few weeks something of the thing, right? So but again we are very new to this, right? It's like so one thing I kept emphasizing in my tweets, right, was that we are using Jupyter as an experiment for our launchpad, right?
Dog feeding, right?
The reason is very simple, right? Is that a lot of people are okay. Honestly, I got a lot of shit for that, right? Because like, oh, why don't you launch in December when the hype was so high, right? Why don't you just launch a token, right? And the reason we didn't launch a token was this, right? It's like if I didn't build a launchpad, if I didn't launch using my own launchpad, right? Then how can I ask any project to use a launchpad, right? It's not possible, right?
Right.
You know. So I think that was a. So what people don't realize is that we actually didn't spend. We actually spent the whole of January building launchpad, right? You know, right? So I kept telling people, right? And Dave, I'm telling you, I learned so many lessons. Mm-hmm. So many lessons. And a lot of the backlash that you see about launchpad is a result of lessons, right? You know, like lessons in communications. I learned a lot. I apologize if I didn't communicate this properly. I really do, okay? And secondly, is I apologize if people didn't understand mechanics enough. Right, which is why I'm hopping on all these shows to try to explain it, right? You know,
right.
Yeah, but anyway, back to the point. So, the point is that Jupyter we experimented, right? You know, and I can talk more about the price curve later on because that's very important, okay? But anyway, but we have this tool to our intern built it, right? You know, this tool to allow you to turn a simple price curve with three parameters: initial, max, and curve, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they'll show you how much you translate into a graph to show you how much you raise. How much USDC and pool is inside in your moment, right? So you create and then you pass the team these parameters and the team will load the tokens, right, according to these parameters,
right?
That's how it works, right? So I think I think it sounds a bit abstract. So let me break down for you in detail what happened in the Jupyter launch. Okay. By the way, David, I'll just share something with you. I actually described a lot of these mechanics in theory over many long posts, right? But I think it's very hard for people to understand kind of like this thing. And don't get me wrong, it's not just them, it's me too, right? If I read something, I don't understand it, right? But if I see something happen, I get it, right? You know?
Okay.
So I think let me break down what happened during the launch. Okay. So at a certain slot, right? Solana is a slot, right? You know, Ethereum is a program, right? You know, slot.
Right.
So at a certain slot, things started going, right? You know, right? So people go over the claim, right? You know, and then the market started moving. Right, and we severely throttled the first few slots to prevent too much botting, right? You know, but otherwise anyone can buy and sell, right, into the thing, right? But anyway, what happened was that there was a lot of bots, right, going to the pool and taking the liquidity, right? Mm-hmm. Because the first part of the liquidity was always cheaper, much cheaper, right? So in many ways, what we did was that we as a team offered tokens for sale, right? Starting at 0.4 to 0.7, right? You know, but remember, it's an open market pool, by the way, right? It's not a closed market pool, right? So everyone was interacting at the same time. Claimers were dumping, right? Mm-hmm. And then they had liquid dump into right away, right? They could dump tokens in right away, right? Mm-hmm. And that's actually very important, right? Because that actually gave a real-time view, right, of like what's actually happening, right? You know, that's quite, let's fucking go, right? RLG, right? And it was actually very intense because as a price, so initially the price only increased, right? You know, which, what does it mean? It means that the price just kept increasing, right, initially, right? Which means that initially there were a lot of people who were willing to buy it at 40 cents, right? And not enough people dumping it, and not enough people selling it at 40 cents, right? You know? And then at some point the centralized exchanges came on as well. Mm-hmm. Right, you know? And then we started seeing quite a bit of selling. Right, you know, I think when it hit 57 cents, you know, right? I think it went to about 70, 73 cents, right? Somewhere else. And then it started backtracking, right? Basically, the demand, basically, people started selling more than they were buying, right? You know, at like the 70 cent mark, right? And then we actually didn't finish the pool, right? We were like 2 million, there was 2 million juke left in the pool. Right, mm-hmm. You know, and started retreating, right, back to like 65 cents, and throughout the last two days now, it has been like going this range,
right?
You know,
it's actually been like relatively stable of a price, and to me, it's actually been kind of incredible because like Uniswap is currently valued at something like $4 or $5 or $6 billion, and Uniswap's on like the bigger network. Granted, Uniswap is only one application; it's an AMM, and Jupiter has many more like apps on it. But being valued above like Uniswap is like pretty monumental. So like in my mind, you tell me,
were you above? Were you above? I don't think we're above. No, when you
Uniswap, aren't you?
No, we have 800 million market cap now, or something.
Oh, I'm talking about fully diluted valuation. I always talk about fully diluted valuation.
It doesn't mean, right?
It is a meme. But yeah, but I mean, it's what people. It's the price that people are able to get, right?
Okay,
so $825 million market cap, fully diluted, $6 billion.
Yeah, around that stuff. Do you mind if I finish something real quick?
Sure, go ahead. Yeah.
Uh-huh. Sorry. It's just important for me to explain this, right? Mm-hmm. Is that the reason the pool actually worked as intended, right? Because what the pool does is that like it created a backstop,
right?
Right. So people can sell into, right? And that's actually very important for three reasons, right? Number one is that airdroppers that wanted to sell their tokens always had liquidity to sell into.
Mm-hmm.
And that to me was important. I mean, I don't know why, but to me that's important, right? You know, sure. Right? But otherwise, it's not a real present, right? You know, if you don't sell, you can't sell, right? And secondly is that I believe, right? I don't know yet, right? But my belief is that it gives buyers a lot of confidence, right? Mm-hmm. Because if liquidity is very thin, right? Mm-hmm. And you have very big airdrops, right? Remember, we are giving away one thing. Remember is this, right? We are giving away like at current 600 million.
Right, so the airdrop was 10% of the total supply, right? Precisely, so right. Total supply is 10 billion, you gave away 1 billion?
Yeah, 1 billion, right? So it, right. It, easy to understand is like, for example, 1 billion tokens, right? 1 billion tokens were available claiming, right? You know, so basically, like, and there was some, as I mentioned, the farm as well, the farm that claimed 2 million tokens, right? So he literally dumped a million, right? Into the, right? So in any other model, you will see the price go through crazy fluctuations.
Right,
because there's no new pool that can take a million. No way, right? You know, but what happened was that this pool, because it had a lot of capital built up, right? You know, it was able to absorb the damage, right? So basically, it also gave buyers confidence too, right? And that okay, cool, okay, I can buy into this pool without getting wrecked, right? I certainly that's what people told me, right? You know, and I don't have any like scientific proof for it, but it makes sense to me.
You're much more like familiar with just like markets and just like what goes on under the hood, but somebody, I look at charts, I can tell a stable chart from an unstable chart, and looking at the Jupiter chart, that is a stable chart, like that is not crazy.
It's crazy. It literally followed the liquidity curve and just gone away, and just came up and just stabilizing. And not just that, yesterday when there was a lot of criticism, right? And a lot of I consider them unresearched, comments. It went down a lot, right? Mm-hmm. But it didn't go all the way down.
Right.
Because there was enough people who could be in there, right? That's it. So I think at the end of the day, I feel like it's a good system because the people that bought the tokens early, right, they believe that was the price they were willing to pay, right? And certainly in our case and stuff, it didn't go too far in, right? It was like it stayed in a relatively high range. Mm-hmm. Right. And secondly is that this pool is team liquidity. Okay, but the team, and this is not just for Jupiter, right? We are also, as I mentioned, we are experimenting, right? So for all launchpad projects, right, we are locking in for 7 days, right? So any project that uses launchpad, the condition is that they must lock the liquidity for 7 days, right? That means that if the founder goes crazy and starts like dancing naked in Times Square.
Do you have these plans?
I don't know, I can't tell. but whatever the case is, right, whether there's or some like big news, whatever kind of stuff, right? There's 7 days, right, for the price to stabilize, right? Mm-hmm. Before the liquidity can be taken out. Right. Okay. So I think it also acts as a backstop pool.
Right.
Right. For stabilizing, things like that. Obviously, I think it's up to the team and we have our plan to do so. Right. Certainly when you take out a lot of liquidity. But it depends, right? For example, the price could be way above it already, right? So taking out liquidity doesn't matter, right? Mm-hmm. Or it could be still within a range, right? Like Jupiter, like for example, for Jupe, right? It looks like it might be within a range,
right?
When you take it out, right? So we have to be very careful, right? About communications. Okay, we have to communicate very carefully. Okay, but how are we going to take it? And that's my bad. So that's actually my bad. Okay.
So maybe can we just unpack this a little bit more? Okay, so there's the initial bootstrapping liquidity, which is the mechanism that we've been talking about that's producing the price discovery for Jupiter. This is part of the Launchpad product. This is also where Jupiter, the team, gets some of its funding in the future, but it's locked for 7 days. Is this all correct?
David. So let me, do you mind if I clarify something? It's pretty important for me.
Yeah.
So because it's also quite hard to understand. It's not hard to understand, but it's quite obvious, but let me share with you. So the price curve that we have is not price discovery. Because there's a lot of people dumping elsewhere, everything. Right? So price can be going everywhere.
Right.
Okay. But it is what it does is that it ensures sufficient liquidity at every price point. Right.
Yeah.
Now, remember what I talked earlier, right? About the supply squeeze.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Where the launchpad suppresses supply, right? In order to create the spike. Which benefits a small set of people. I hate that. I really don't like that, right? I really don't like that. Because I think I think what that leads is to it leads to a system whereby like the people that so I call this anti again, I'm trying to figure something. It might not work, right? But I want to do a anti-FOMO thing whereby along every single step of the way, right, there is sufficient liquidity. And that's all for Jupiter, right? Jupiter, it was priced low initially. And another mistake that I made was actually priced lower. Okay, so I made a bunch of mistakes, but it's okay because future projects can learn, But I think for me, I did a few mistakes. I should price it at like 0.25 and 0.5, right? But I think, and the reason I was scared of being bottom, right? But I think I was too scared of being bottom, right?
Mm.
But long story short is that along every single, so it's not really price discovery, but more like, this curve is there to make sure that there's sufficient supply at every step of the price discovery, so it doesn't go crazy. You know what I'm saying?
Secondary discovery or like
secondary like stable discovery.
Okay, and so this is the liquidity coming in from the Jupiter, the Jupiter team. Would you call it? Because the Jupiter team is supplying the Jupe tokens. And then over that 7 day period, this Jupe tokens get sold for USDC or Solana, or like what's the other half? USDC.
Yeah.
Okay. So this liquidity is locked for 7 days.
Yes. So basically, So another mistake that I made in communications, right? mm-hmm. is that I used the word, I wasn't careful about how I was using the words, right? And I also didn't appreciate how LP, single-sided LP. So I kept in my long blog post, I was very technical, right? I said that single-sided LP and blah, blah, blah. Oh, sure. I didn't even answer all those things. Right? So it's my bad. You know, I didn't communicate well, right? And I think that led to a lot of misunderstandings. It's my bad. But anyway, long story short is that the team provided. And by the way, one thing I would really encourage everyone to check out, because we really spent immense amount of time on, right? It's our token accountability, okay? We really kind of spend our time making sure that every single Jupe is like accounted for, you know? So I would encourage everyone to check those things out, okay? And we also labeled all the, you know, all the wallets and everything very, very close, very, very clearly. So anyone that wants to track anything that goes in and out, they can just track it very easily, okay? Yeah, but in our case, right, I think we had about 3.5% of tokens that was taken out. So we have four community observed wallets, okay? The team code, community code, team multisig, community multisig, right? So those are the community observed wallets, right? And we consider those to be not part of the circulating. Okay.
Right.
So as part of that, we took out 10%. We took out 10%, right? You know, for the airdrop. Mm-hmm. Right. So that's considered circulating, right? We also took out 3.5%, right? You know, right? And of which 2.5% went to the pool.
Okay.
Right? The pool, right? You know, mm-hmm. and then we had 50, we had 0.5% for MM loans and other sex and MM loan and other sex needs. And then we have 0.5 for in case the pool ran out and we need to provide liquidity to other systems, right? Urgently, right? You know, right? So that is the extent, right, of the tokens that we had. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And anyway, long story short is that, so part, there is 1.35 billion right now in circulating, right? You know, mm-hmm. 10% is airdrop already. I think 69% is claimed already, I think. Mm-hmm. Right. So it's claimed already, right? So I think, but we consider all that in circulating. Okay. Right. And then 2.5% is in the, and 2.5% in the pool right now. And so about, I would say 80% of the tokens are already the pool right now, I think about 80% or 85% is USDC, right? And the rest are Jupe tokens, right? Okay. So assuming the price remains the same, right? Mm-hmm. You know, at the end of 7 days, the team, which is us in this case, has the right to take the tokens away. Actually, right. Honestly, it was 3 days, right? Oh, it's 3 days, but then I think we are making 7 days. Mm-hmm. Okay. So because
how much total value is that?
Total value, I mean, in USDC, there's about 100 in there right now, 98. But okay. That's assuming the price stays, right?
Current prices, correct.
Yeah. Right. Because the way it works is very simple, right? It's like another mantra is very simple, right? We believe that the team should, again, I'm trying to develop a model, not just for Jupiter, right? But mm-hmm. a model, I think, me as a retail participant mm-hmm. and as an ecosystem player want to see, right? Which is, okay, the team should get whatever the price set us at. You know, right? Mm-hmm. Not the peak price or whatever, not right? Because actually, okay, I mean, we all know what happens in these kind of situations, right?
Right.
The surprise squeeze and the thing pumps, and then the team sells at the top. You know, right. Very, very common, right? You know, things like that. So, right. so that's not that we're the opposite of that, right? You know, mm-hmm. basically, we're the opposite of that, right? You know, basically, the team only gets which is very simple, right? Now, if the mm-hmm. price if the price settles at 0.7. Setters at 0.7 and stuff, mm-hmm. then I think the team will get, I think, 125 million, right, okay. in USDC, right? But if the price setters at, like, right now is 98, 0.5 is at 50, right, and then go on, so on and so forth, right, things like that, you know, okay. right? So we are, like, so essentially, I think that's fair. To me, that's fair, you know? Mm-hmm. But remember, we actually took a pretty big risk in pricing at 0.4 to 0.7, right?
Right.
Actually, we should price it lower, right? Mm-hmm. You know? Yeah. We price it, because that would actually have reduced the, but again, I think I regret over compensating for bots because there were so many bots on social media that bragging that mm-hmm. they're gonna retire all and shit, you know, right? So I think seriously. So I was like, okay, fuck it, right? So I think I wanted to avoid the nightmare of like having the early thing all being gobbled up, you know, right? But on hindsight, I feel like I could have done like 0.25 to 0.5 and that'd be fine. You know, yeah. So I think, but it's okay. I'll give this project. I'll give the rest of the projects, right? You know, in the future. You know, right? Because I think we did actually. Yeah, that's how I think about it. Yeah, you know, but it's good lessons. Yeah.
So at the end of the 7 days, do you have any? What are your plans? Are you just when you have the window open to take liquidity? Are you just going to take like what are the plans here? Are you going to take all of it or like a little bit? Like what's the deal?
I don't know yet.
No plans.
I don't know yet. No plans yet. I feel like, but I think what I'll do is that I'll communicate very clearly what I'm going to do. You know, okay. I feel like the important thing here is for me not to say anything right now, right? You know, but I don't know where it's going to be at. Right. If it's at 0.7 mm-hmm. and 0.4, it's very different plans. right. Mm-hmm. But then, so I think that's very nice. I feel like that's the nice thing about this model, right? Mm-hmm. Is that you are literally letting the market do things, decide for you, right? You know, before mm-hmm. you actually pushed up, right? I think it's great. Mm-hmm. Long story short is that I don't know because I don't know where it's going to settle at, sure. right? It could be 0.4, 0.5 or 0.7. Right. I don't know, right? Mm-hmm. But one thing is for sure, I'm not going to sell a single drip. Okay? Mm. Any drip that's not sold, right, you know, will go right back into the and it will stay there. Okay, and track it. Okay, and but obviously, if I 0.4, I don't sell anything, mm-hmm. right? You know, then I might need to do some OTC, right? Obviously, you know, right? You know, but I'll be open about it. I'll be like, hey, I didn't get any stables here, right? You know, mm-hmm. I'll need to do some USDC here. I think mm-hmm. I think the community will understand. You know, right? You know, yeah, it's fine, you know, right? But obviously at 0.7, then I might do something else. So I think it all depends. So I think, but what I'll do is just simple. Once I have a clear signal of like what it's going to be, you know, right? Then I think I will over-communicate. You know, I learned my lesson, you know, things like that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's it, yeah.
Let's talk about the load on the Solana network. So Solana didn't miss a block, didn't go down, which is under stress, which is great. There were some failed transactions. People were talking about not being able to get some of their transactions through. How would you give a report card, a grade to the performance of the Solana network during the launch of the token?
I would say it's great. I would say that Solana has improved a lot, right? You know, through the days, right? It's like, I think there was 1.17 was dropped recently, right? Actually, we actually timed the Juke launch to happen after 1.17 because there was actually a lot of like improvements, including some algo bugs and also like some CPU limit improvements, right? CPU competition improvements. I think 1.18 is coming out soon, which will really make the local fee markets a lot more effective, right? You know, so I think in many ways, I think it's very nice for us to like stress test network, you know? So I think ideally every single launch pad we stress test network, you know, mm-hmm. right? What's actually interesting was that a lot of other things broke, mm-hmm. right? For example, some models didn't work as well, right. You know, and some of our systems, because we were overstressing but it's not Solana's network problem, right? It's that we were overstressing our own RPCs,
right?
Right. You know, we had orders, right? And we were trying to fill those orders, right? So we were stressing, but it's actually our bad because, for example, right, instead of like pre-caching a lot of the orders, because we knew what those orders were already, right? So we could have like cache them beforehand and then like execute them, right? Instead, we were like fetching them real time, right? Which created mm-hmm. a reload, unnecessary reload on our network as well. So we just fucked up, you know, a lot of things. Yeah. Anyway, but I would say the network itself went pretty well. Right. I would say that a lot of other infra stuff didn't work that well, you know, right? But it's
right. Okay, so the core of Solana, which is the actual Solana network, did just fine. Maybe the next concentric circle out, which is the RPC layer around Solana, still needs some improvement.
More like how people use RPCs. RPCs are fine, but how people use it are fine. Like they didn't scale out appropriately, or the load balancing didn't work properly, things like that, mm-hmm. right? And the core network thing, I would say that like there's still some errors in terms of like it's still hard to estimate gas. Like what's the right gas to use? You know, right? But generally speaking, I think the core network went up pretty well. You know, like everything saw a big spike, obviously, mm-hmm. right? You know, and there were, but remember this, right? What was actually interesting was this. Because we priced at 0.4, right? Which is a level that people that like Jupiter would buy, but not something that spammer bots would necessarily buy, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. So we didn't actually get as aggressive. If we went like, because originally the price go to 1/10 of my utopian, originally my utopian idea for was to start at 1/10 and just go, right? But 1/10 mm-hmm. will be, 1/10 will actually be, a lot of like a lot then we get spam like crazy, right?
Right.
In many ways, right? So I think that's the reason. Yeah. Yeah.
Sure. Okay, so at the end of this 7-day period, in theory, the Jupiter team will have capital, be able to enter the next phase of hopefully Jupiter the team.
Hopefully,
yeah, yeah. Right. Hopefully, yeah. Hopefully. In the ideal scenario, this is like the plan. Like, there are some edge conditions we can talk about, but just like the whole idea is like Jupiter now has capital to enter the next phase of its development. What are the next phases for Jupiter? What does the roadmap look like moving forward?
I think first of all, I think it's about improving infra, right? You know, like our core products, right? So I think I mean, a lot of things are incredibly boring, by the way. Like, we scale up our customer support team. No, I'm not kidding. I'm very serious here. Like, I literally spend
it's important. People love teams with customer support teams in crypto.
I spent 1 month on this shit, man. It's not easy. Starting everything, making sure everything is in, getting the right people in and stuff. Like, so, I mean, like, some fucking stupid shit, man. It's like, I'm not fucking kidding, man. Like, I spend so much time on stupid shit, remember? Like, it's not serious, I think about it. It's not stupid. It's just what people might consider not exciting, right? You know, right? Mm-hmm. But to me, we are very proud of this, right? We reply to everything we reply to, you know, things like that. So we spend time on, like, and we also need people who actually can answer questions, can read blockchains, right? And I think having a high EQ, so I'm going to be pretty boring, okay? So bear with me, okay? Mm-hmm. But my one of my big goals is to have a high EQ, high IQ support team, right? You know, that is able to work with the engineers, right? And the users as well, right? Because things get pretty fiery, right? You know, and because it's very technical, the people might not know what they're doing, right? You know, right? And then if you get into, so you need to have a high EQ to handle these complaints, but also high IQ to understand what's going on, right? So I think my goal is to have a high IQ support team, right? You know, that is able to work through our products, right? Because here's the problem. If you don't have, and also to report the issues to engineers, right? So they can actually see the problem, right? Because the reason is very simple. I feel like, when we first started, we had very small number of users, right? So the user interfacing the engineers is good enough. They're done, right? Mm-hmm. But then in this case, as the number of product scale and stuff, and the engineers remain relatively small, right? You can't do that, right? So what you need is that you need that layer, you know, to allow the engineers to still feel the pain, but also handle, do their stuff, right? So I think trying to build a layer in is very, very important. Okay, so that's the first thing we want to do, okay? I want to make sure that we have an extremely good, like, you know, like a community team, right? That's able to kind of like, you know, address the community, address the use complaints and things like that, right? Because we're working real money, right? I mean, real money here, you know, like maybe to us, like, you know, $100 is not such a big deal, right? You know, but to someone else, it's a huge deal, right? And so I think we have to be careful. We have to be sensitive to that, right? Yeah, that's something. Mm-hmm. The second thing we're building is that I think we definitely want to improve our core products. We feel like across Swap, limit order, DCA, gateway, perps, and launchpad. Those are a very comprehensive set of features, right, for on-chain exchange already, right? Mm-hmm. So I don't think the next step is, so I think 90% of the effort would not be new products, right? You know, but just be okay, making sure that those things are good and getting better, right? You know, every single day. You know, so that's the second key focus, right? And obviously we do actually want to experiment in new things as well. Right, you know, so I think this includes like running scaling our infra, mm-hmm. you know, like or infra, like and getting involved with Solana Core, right? Which is something that we haven't been able to do because we haven't had the capital to do it. Right, you know, but if we do well with this initial launch, right, then we will definitely have capital to kind of like, you know, get a couple of in-house Solana like people to work on Solana Core full time. You know,
yeah,
right. Yeah. You know, mm-hmm. yeah, and also to build up some cross chain expertise as well, right? You know, because I personally has been very interested in cross chain for a while now, right? Mm-hmm. I think we are definitely going to focus 100% on Solana being the home, right? In our Jupiter, right? You know, but at the same time there are many chains around, right? You know, so how do we kind of like better? And I'm not a chain maxi, by the way. You know, I'm not a chain maxi, right? I do believe that focusing the product and ecosystem building on Solana is the right thing to do, and also obviously I love the ecosystem, right? They'd be very nice to me. At the same time, I think it's very important to connect with other ecosystems as well, right? And also trying to figure out what's the best way to do that is important for me, you know? Mm-hmm. So those are things that I want to have a team to work on as well. Yeah, so, you know, so those three things. Like making sure that we scale up in terms of, so in summary, three things, right? Making sure we scale up in terms of the basics, right? You know, like the community, and to me, the one important basic that the engineers would grow because they need more people, so they will grow. on their own, right? But then what no one would explicitly do unless someone to really push that, right? You know, it's this like community support, right? So so that's my focus. And you know, engineers do hire them, do their hiring, all right?
All right. So the hiring, you guys are going to be hiring for a bunch of roles. If people are interested in those roles, what types of people are you looking for?
Different. I think we're interested in people with proven expertise in there are two kinds, right? The first kind is that you can the first kind is you're a generalist where you can learn, right? And that's kind of the high EQ, high IQ guy I was talking about, right? In this or that, right? You know, so that's the first category, you know, right? And very often those guys are sourced from a community, they tend to be great. I think the second ones are those that have a proven expertise, whether it's in terms of like running infra, running high scale like infra, Solana infra, right? Or having like or being like or contributed to the Solana core work, right? You know, right? So those two sets of people. Yeah.
Beautiful. Well, Miao, it's always a big day when you launch a token, so congrats on that. If people want to just learn more about Jupiter, or maybe some Ethereum people want to use Jupiter for the first time, where would you send people?
Okay, so thanks for asking. Appreciate it. Go to jup.ag, jup.ag. That's our site.
jup.ag, Jupiter Aggregator. Is that what that is?
Yeah. And then there's a gateway, there's a bridge or gateway link there. Mm-hmm. Go to, and over there you can find all of the different ways, right? You can bring to Solana, right? We have this like comparator where I can compare what's the best way between different bridges. Right, mm-hmm. You know, to bring your campaign mm-hmm. in, right? Or you can do it via credit card, or you can do it via or you can bridge your ETH in as well, right? You know, and get some mm-hmm. So we have a very comprehensive way for you to bridge into Solana, right? You know, and if you're interested in learning more about the things I was discussing, right? You can check out my Twitter, right? Or for more concise information, look at because I shit talk a lot on Twitter, right? Mm-hmm. But you can check out jup.research, right? You know, and just like jup research. I copied ETH research here, okay? So it's literally jup.reach. Okay.
We'll get all these links into the show notes for listeners who just want to click.
But the jup research is where it's at, because that's actually okay. I'm personally committed to doing two things, okay? I'm actually very apologetic for all the misunderstandings out there. So I'm personally apologetic for that. So I'm committed to doing two things, right? To writing out a lot of the information into the research post, and also to post a simplified version. Okay, sure. You know, on Twitter as well. So I'll do those two things. Yeah.
Okay. Well, Miao, thank you so much. Where did the name Miao come from?
Oh my god. Okay. First of all, I wish I love cats. You know, check it out.
Of course. Yeah.
The cat stuff. But so actually my name is my full name is actually very similar to Miao. Uh-huh. Very, very similar to Miao. So it just came out together, you know. And then I think it's just fun, you know, because not everyone like founders, right? But everyone loves cats, you know? Right. So I mean, like, not everyone like tech bros, right? You know, but everyone loves cats, right? So okay, sure. Uh-huh. Just Miao. But it's more mainstream.
All right, Miao. Well, once again, congrats on the token launch, and thanks for coming on the Bankless Nation and telling us your story.
One more thing, hey, sure. Big fan of yours. So thank you so much for bridging the two worlds. Mm-hmm. I know how hard it is for you to bridge the two worlds because you know there's a lot of things going on, but really appreciate it for doing that. You know, and to everyone Ethereum, I would say that Ethereum was my home for a long time, mm-hmm. right? You know, and I continue to really appreciate the community. The research community is like way ahead of anybody else, right? You know, and the amount of like decentralization there is amazing as well, right? Things like that. You know, mm-hmm. so I continue to be a very big fan, you know, even though I do most of my work in Solana now. Yeah, that's what I say. Yeah,
of course. Thanks, Miao. Bankless Nation, you guys know the deal. Crypto is risky, DeFi is risky, new tokens are risky, everything's risky here. But sometimes that's why we're here, because we're headed west. This is the frontier. It's not for everyone, but we are glad you are with us on the Bankless journey. Thanks a lot.